President Ford has called inflation public enemy number one, but how can it be the public enemy when it seems to be so much of the general public is cuddling up to inflation and loves it with both hands greedily? When is anyone going to voluntarily begin to do what the president asks and lower prices or wages, costs, you name it? We've got to step down. Now, I could waste a half hour by giving you an endless series of statistics to prove to you prices are going up. I'm going to do differently from that. I'm going to show you who the real culprits are, and let's find out whether or not there are any hopeful signs we can whip inflation before it's too late.
I keep track of what I spend, knowing that I don't have too much to spend. I have to stretch it. It was $10 more in June than it was in May, and I hadn't bought any steak, any roast, anything, only the necessities. I'd look for the specials, cut out their coupons, and try to live. I don't know how people with children make it, because it's a struggle for me.
I don't want charity. We're proud. We don't want charity. When you go down to the grocery and buy sugar that you used to get for 39 cents, and it's $1.54 now for 5 pounds. I paid 38 cents for a pound of brown sugar the other day.
I have an average of 160 plus the $55 of war widows. And I pay $87 for rent, and then my food. Say you buy potatoes, and you buy soup bone, and you buy stew, and those things. Well, you can't afford to buy a potato anymore. You can't afford how to buy flour. Got a little doctor bill this morning. He looked at me 5 minutes because I had an inward bleeding in my leg, and he looked at it. He says, "That's inward bleeding. I can't do nothing about it." $12, there's the bill. Took him 5 minutes. Didn't take him that long when just to look.
When they say cost of living has gone up 0.1%, well, you know, people don't buy cars every day, or every year. They don't buy furniture every year. And all those luxuries, it's food and clothing and housing. Why don't they separate that?
This country was a country of proud people. They didn't want charity. They didn't want help from the government. We wanted to save money that we could live in dignity when we're old. But now our dignity's all taken away.
That way everybody would love them.
We're buying less clothes. We're buying cheaper cuts of meats. And we don't entertain. We don't go out as often as we did. We can't afford it.
Inflation is more than just a nettlesome problem that affects lonely ladies living in apartment houses, and you can see that's not really what you could call poverty level living. We tried to show you that so you'd get the impression that inflation hurts people beside just totally poor folks and those that are completely incapacitated, veterans of foreign wars and hospitals and people on fixed incomes. It hurts everybody. Inflation, though, is far more than just a nettlesome problem to talk about and gripe about and look at disgust at the label on the can of beans or the loaf of bread or the quart of milk in the supermarket. It is something which can and will surely bring this nation down if we don't whip the problem. Now, we could all just simply absolve all of our debts like they did in Germany way back in 1923. Because people want to be millionaires, everybody does. I'll talk about that in a minute, like athletes and everybody from bus and truck drivers to professional sports figures. But, you know, in Germany, everybody almost overnight became a trillionaire. That's right, a trillionaire. All the government had to do was just print larger denominations on the bills. Everybody had billions upon billions, no, trillions of Deutschmarks. So maybe, if that's what we want, if that's what every different vested interest or group or union or segment of labor or big business or industry wants to do, why, eventually we can change our $1 bills into $1 million bills. And we can all be millionaires and wipe out of all of our debts and get rid of them, and then we'll just be sailing home free, won't we? Well, you know, inflation is, most people think, the government's responsibility, because the government is said to be printing money like mad. The Vietnam War was largely called a printing press war. More money pumped into circulation means higher costs and higher prices, because there's much more money flowing around to be had. On the other hand, people blame the private sector because they say people in the various unions are striking to get higher wages. Everybody blames everybody else. And the excuses that are being used are incredible. When someone looks around and sees somebody else making more money than he is making, instead of using that as a criterion to say the other guy should come down, he says we, therefore, should go up. We should make more money. Look at the example of Los Angeles area, where the RTD, that's the bus drivers, basically, were going on strike because they were making an average of about $10,000 to $11,000 a year on the starting wage. But when reporters went to interview them, they found almost no one was making that starting wage. They were making closer to $12,000 to $13,000, or in the $13,000 to $17,000 bracket every single year. But still, they wanted to go out on strike. They were talking about it. I have some of the newspaper clippings here. It broke down when 650,000 riders were affected because of a walkout of two unions and about 3,000 bus drivers. And the basic issue they agreed was money. And I said that perhaps deliberately, because the issue was greed, and they agreed on that. The drivers' prime argument was that they ranked about 18th in the nation in pay among major transit systems, even though the RTD was fourth in size. And so instead of getting $1 million worth of free publicity and publicizing this dramatically around the nation as a whole, hooray for Los Angeles. Look, we're 18th in the nation in pay among the major transit areas, where we're the fourth in size. Why don't the other guys come down a little? No, they wanted to go up. I did a little bit of quick figuring, and it looks to me like the pay rises that they wanted had to do with a fantastic increase that would go from an approximate $10,987 beginning wage per year to $14,040 beginning wage per year. And I couldn't help but speculate, as I was thinking about that just before we came on the air here, that I know of one Falcon jet operator who employs several hundred pilots, and they have to fly a super sophisticated jet airplane. It's called Federal Express, and they make freight runs back and forth across the country day and night. And their starting wage is $1,000 a month. So they start with a type-rated jet pilot who has to have infinitely more knowledge and experience and far more expertise in what he is doing than the average bus driver. And I'm not putting bus drivers down. They're fine folks. They're essential. They deserve a good, honest wage for a good, hard day's work. You know it, and I know it. But the point is, there are these unbelievable disparities here and there in the system. But everybody seems to be bucking for more money, more wages, higher, higher, and more, and more, and more. Now, I had said recently on a daily radio program, and by the way, I'm on daily radio all around the United States and Canada, and you can hear it if you'll write for the Plain Truth magazine and get the radio log, and you'll hear some pretty hard-hitting, straight-from-the-shoulder, plain talk on that radio program. I've been saying time and again that the measure of our success is going to be directly proportionate to how well we heed what the President of the United States has been saying about attacking what he calls public enemy number one. Well, it was back on August 13th that he said that the General Motors record price increase was, he quoted, very disappointing to him. But the GM action had gone in anyway. On August 13th, the President expressed the idea or the hope that this would not be viewed as a signal by other automobile companies or other industries to raise their prices. Then do you know what happened on August the 21st, only a few days later? This article came out in a leading West Coast newspaper. Ford raises car prices. Not President Ford, Ford Motor Company. A 10% hike was announced. In Dearborn, Michigan, the president of Ford Motor Company said his firm had little choice but to follow the lead of General Motors Corporation, which had announced 1975 price increases averaging $500 a car, or 9.5%. That says several things to me. Number one, it shows that Ford doesn't claim to be number one. It obviously claims to be number two. Number two, it shows Ford has no intention at all of following the president by the same name. It has every intention of following the leader, and the leader is General Motors. So that also shows me who really is in charge here. The president of the United States coming in the wake of the Watergate agony, asking the American public to pray for him, apparently a strong enough man that he really has some pretty honest, square-shooting, firm resolves about getting about the business of tackling some of the problems of this country and solving them, making some fairly wise decisions and choices at the very outset of his administration, appeals to the big automobile manufacturers, please hold those prices in line, and says, I hope other companies, only a few days before this announcement, I hope other companies won't follow this. I hope they will hold prices down. So Ford Motor Company said they were going to raise their prices too. Their announcement, incidentally, of their additional price boost came right amid reports that Kenneth Rush, who was the White House economic advisor, and other administration officials were talking with GM, Ford, and the other automobile manufacturers about the need for price restraints in the battle against inflation. Battle? Battle? What battle? There's no battle underway against inflation. The president can make a statement, I hope that this big motor company won't follow the other motor company and their price rises are ridiculous. So instead of doing the obvious, which I think would be obvious to anybody, Ford Motor Company could easily have held prices right where they were. Now, I know all the arguments. I've listened to it. I've read it. He says, yes, but we're operating on a 1.2% profit margin. Look, profit is profit. That's not overhead. That's profit. That's what you skim off the top. I'll guarantee you the man who made that statement, the president of the company, has not taken a wage decrease. I doubt even if the wage has been frozen. I would imagine, and I would speculate, that the average annual wage increases are going on apace throughout the industry. And they're saying that they can't survive with less than a 2% profit margin per year. And saying that as the costs come to them in terms of government mandates, meaning anti-pollution equipment and safety devices, they have just got to raise prices. And I say, hogwash. They don't have to do any such thing any more than you have got to buy their product. They could have frozen those prices right there voluntarily and made a mint. You know how? Simple. An awful lot of the GM buyers, the GM customers, would have taken a look. There would have been multiple millions of dollars of free publicity emblazoned across headlines all over the United States of America saying Ford Motor Company refuses to follow the lead of General Motors and announce price hikes of up to 8 to 10%. Instead, Ford is only going to go along at a 2 to 3% or something like that that is more meaningful and more seemingly sensible. So tens of thousands of prospective GM buyers would have gone over to the Ford dealer and said, look, I can get along with the Ford because after all, it's a good car. It probably has the 25 average factory discernible defects at delivery time like any other automobile, but I mean, it's a fairly good car. I can get along with a Ford this year because it's $500 less for the same type comparable model than the other one. What happened to the good old American incentive of competition? That's the name of the game, isn't it? Well, it shows me who the leader really is in this country. The President of the United States, who incidentally is named Ford, says, I hope other companies won't follow the GM announced price increases. Promptly, a few days later, the Ford Automobile Company says, and I quote, that they had little choice but to follow the lead of General Motors. Okay, that's fine. If that's whose lead we're going to follow, then we can keep following the lead of big business or of industry, of labor, of unions, of the desire for more, 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 more money, more profits, more increase, more excess, more money, and we can go straight down the drain as a nation. Now, wherever you look, people want more. And wherever you look, you see not just the profit motive, but the motive of greed. And that is the name of the game these days, because profit is one thing, and toadish, puffed up, swelling, egotistical greed is something else again. I notice now that leading movie stars are demanding or getting, whichever the case is, $1 million per movie. And if you can grind out two or three a year, you can probably barely make living expenses. I noticed, too, that many athletes, even when they are in high school, are pretty much given the promise of a contract. You can go back to the days of Lou Alcindor when he was still in high school in New York City. The idea of a $1 million contract was in papers all over the country. And there seems to be some strange way that big sports, which is synonymous with big business these days, and maybe one of these days the football season will begin in the 1st of June and end about the last of February. I don't know, but we're nearly going to begin seeing year-round football with major leagues all over the place, and they own these athletes. They really do. They barter, they buy, they sell, and they trade. If an athlete comes along and he wants $1 million, no sweat. If you can pay somebody $1 million a year, a 3-year contract of over $3 million, to ram a ball that is rubber covered with cowhide through a metal hoop with string hanging on it, that seems to be right and fair and square and exactly what they are earning. They're really earning that kind of money. And so, highly sensationalized, widely publicized household figures, far better known to millions of Americans than members of Congress or the House of Representatives or even their state governments, are making millions upon millions of dollars and sometimes holding out, going on strike, not showing up for training camp, and demanding more. Now, all of this has got to have some kind of spin-off in the American private sector. People see that for being a sports hero, for being a motion picture act. No wonder Mayor Lindsay, the former Mayor Lindsay, went over to Europe and disappeared for 8 months and came back and revealed that he had been doing a part in an Otto Preminger movie. If you're making $1 million a movie, I mean, that's where the money is. It's got to have some kind of a spin-off in the private sector where people are wanting this get-rich-quick thing. They're wanting more money. They want more goods, more services, more of everything. Now, you can talk of any segment of the society you would like, and everybody's got his legitimate gripe. But let me tell all of us something. That one of these days, when all of us athletes and all of us truck drivers and bus drivers and auto workers and electrical workers and coal miners going out on strike who don't think we're making enough money, we're going to turn around and say, why didn't we listen to those farmers who told us about the cost of twine going up more than double, and the cost of baling wire, and the cost of equipment and machinery, and the cost of diesel fuel and gasoline, and the cost of oil-based petrochemical-type fertilizers and so on going out of sight, where farm after farm is simply going into bankruptcy, because when we go to the supermarket and we say, look, meat's going back up again, what are you going to do, blame the drought alone? Because there is a drought, and I've been talking about that before live audiences all the way across the United States and Canada. Farmers have had it too. Fertilizer costs have tripled. Baling wire has quadrupled in cost. Fuel costs have doubled. Farm machinery is up 25% to 35%, because those who work on the farm machinery say that food costs more money. And they got to have more money because they say automobiles cost more money. And they say they got to have an automobile. And the people making the automobiles say we got to have more money because food costs more money and the car we buy costs more money. And of course, they're making the cars. And so everybody needs more money. You know why the cost of cars goes up? Because they say the government is making us make them safer. Well, that's partly a cop-out, and it'd be nice if the government would decide to challenge that statement and find out by appointing a government committee to really look into the mess and find out if that is exactly where all the costs come from, or our parts manufacturers and people who supply vinyl from petrochemical industries again, and tires and so on, going up. Now, we can just print $1 bills into $1 million bills if we'd like and just enjoy it. It reminds me of the way they used to do with these little pinball machines. Maybe it's an aside, but back when I was a boy in a corner little grocery store in my part of the neighborhood, there was a pinball machine, and it had hundreds, 200s, and 500s on it. And the ball would bounce around, you'd make a score of 500 or 600, and maybe if you got 3,000 or 4,000, you got a free game. Now, they got millions, you know, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000. As a matter of fact, it says continued on the next machine. So it's just a play, a game with a lot of zeros after a figure, but beyond that, it's absolutely meaningless. Listen, money is not worth anything of and by itself. Money is a medium of exchange. Money is a standard. Now, in one sense of the word, money is a symbol of the value of a society. As long as the society has value, as long as the society believes in enough of a work ethic, enough of honesty, enough of thrift, of a desire to save, of a desire to be absolutely square with your neighbor, to be out of debt, to turn in a hard, honest day's work for an honest day's wage, as long as you've got something to balance the normal human nature, which is vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed, you've got something going for you. You see, out of the profit-making motive, out of greed, if you will, and lust, can come a lot of good, as long as it's controlled, as long as it's balanced. Because out of the desire to maybe win a prize at the stock show because you raise a better calf or a better looking bull or a cow than the neighbor does, can come a real good product. Better herds, better beef, better meat for everybody. Out of the desire to build a faster, better, more beautiful car can come hand machine tools and careful hand custom built automobiles and the like, and that can be fine. Good automobiles, good clothing, musical instruments, the way people perform in entertainment, it can all be a basic vanity motive, which in a sense is not right in God's sight, and the Bible condemns, but where are you going to get people with a motive of saying, I just want to serve my fellow man. I want to help my fellow man. I'm building this thing because I take pride in my work, and I just want to give and share to people. No, you have the balancing factor of vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed, and primarily greed, which is the profit motivation in our society, and as long as that is harnessed, then you can have production. You can have creativity, you can have invention and design, and you can have quality. And all of this can be the outgrowth of vanity, of jealousy, of lust, and of greed. But when it gets to uncontrollable proportions, when people just will not stay where they are, reduce costs, reduce prices, save, be thrifty, work hard for slightly less, sacrifice voluntarily, then we as a nation are in trouble. I want to come back and tell you a couple of examples, at least, of exactly how this human nature factor is running rampant right now today, and why, unless you can find something in the newspapers I haven't been able to find, as I am looking for answers in the private sector to attempts at government leadership. I'm not talking about the government stepping in with the National Guard or the Army and bayonets to make people go to work for lower wages. I'm talking about a strong president who stands up and says, I hope the other companies won't follow the lead of this one company that announced huge price hikes for the next year. And sure enough, to show you who they're really following, the Ford Motor Company decided to follow GM, not the president, by the same name.
Free subscription to the monthly Plain Truth magazine, call toll-free 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Voluntary sacrifice, it seems to me, would be so much easier than sacrifice when we don't want to sacrifice, but we've just got to because the goods are no longer available. We could do it. We really could. But I don't know where you're going to look to find the signs that we are doing it. Now, we've gone up and down the length and breadth of all the attempts to document and to itemize these problems and to present to you, much like the networks do, all of the statistics and the graphs and the charts and the examples, such as I have one clipping here of the lady who reached for a can on the shelf and a clerk came along and said, pardon me, ma'am, could I have that can a minute? Grabbed the can out of her hand and stuck a label on it for a few cents more before she could beat the guy to the checkout clerk there to buy the thing. So we see these examples. We have gone around, we've asked people. I want to show you, for example, how inflation hurts the middle class in home buying, one of the really tight problems of today. Our staff interviewed the chairman of the board of a large construction company about the effects of inflation on housing.
When you realize that 75% of our people in Southern California have an annual income of $10,250, it takes it out of their means to buy, because in addition to that, they pay taxes, fire insurance, and the cost of maintenance. This takes a home up to $478 a month, or nearly $500 a month, or $6,000 a year, and they only make $10,250. And with the cost of food and other products under the inflationary thrust, it's impossible for 75% of our people to buy homes. I feel that we're reaching a crisis in our own business, that there's got to be builders and people who know these cost factors and problems, that our planning commissioners of cities and the states and the federal government have got to begin to listen to builders who know the facts of actually building a home. I think there's been a lot of planning and sociologists planning what can be done that don't know the facts.
We have a chance to whip inflation if we want to, but I am not optimistic as I look at this and that and the other area of the country, whether the coal strikes, whether the RTD strikes, whether people in every sector who are screaming, I want more. Nobody seems to say, let's be the first. And when you look back in history, even back to the time of Secretary of Defense McNamara, who closed down some military bases, and people's response to that, they said, go ahead, that's great. We want the government to reduce this unbelievable defense burden. We're tired of this defense spending. But they said, close down somebody else's blankety-blank base. Don't close mine down because I'm the cleaner or the haberdasher or I'm the florist or I'm the mortician or I'm the taxicab driver that lives off the military personnel that live in this small town or on this base. So people wanted it to happen, but they didn't want it to affect them. And that's no good. It's never going to work if we approach it that way. We have a chance to overcome the problem of inflation if we will unitedly and collectively get about the business of doing so. There are things you can begin to do right now. You don't have to buy an automobile priced like that. You don't have to buy things that you see in a store where the prices are ridiculous, and you can be a little more vocal about it than you are. You can invest in yourself in the way of job training. You could list your personal priorities, your expenses in order of importance. Do you just have to have a new car, a new coat, a color television set, an overseas vacation, or don't you? You could begin to do it yourself a little more around the house. Paint your own house, mow your own lawn, build your own fence, and you could, and I think you should, plant a garden. I've got one. I mean it, and I'm glad. I mean, even the traditional hedges for poor people like cornbread and beans are going out of sight. Beans are expensive today. So, I don't know. I'm a little bit pessimistic. If I were to be able to see big business, labor, the consumer, all holding fast and doing what the president has asked, I would be optimistic. But let's see. President Ford indicated he was going to veto 23% increases for veterans' benefits. Let's find out what the reaction is or was. Did they say, all right, that's fine, we can grit our teeth and lock arms and stand shoulder to shoulder and we can whip this thing because we're willing to take that reduction? Or will they say, let somebody else do it? If we keep saying, let George do it, our country is going down the drain.
All literature offered on the Garner Ted Armstrong program is free upon request. Write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Canadian viewers write Box 44, Vancouver, BC. In the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, call 213-577-5225. Be sure to watch Garner Ted Armstrong again next week at this same time.